From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. As President Obama pitches his economic rescue plan directly to the American people, the country is reeling from record job losses last month. One state is forcing workers to stay home 2 days a month with no pay. And federal regulators shut down three more banks over the weekend. We've got author and economist Dr. Julianne Malveaux here with us to dissect the latest in the economic news. Hello, Dr. Malveaux.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
Well, I'm glad to have a job, let's put it that way.
You know, that's a good thing.
Businesses and institutions have now shed jobs for the last 13 months in a row. Last month alone, we lost nearly 600,000 jobs. Nissan is the latest to announce big cuts. President Obama, Dr. Malveaux, has warned of double-digit unemployment rates. It seems like every time I have you on the show, we ask the same question. How high is unemployment going to go?
Well, the rate we're going, it can get to double digit. The last time we've seen anything like that was in 1981 in the early Reagan years. And double digit unemployment is no joke. But, Tony, many people believe that we have really already crossed the line. If you look at the most recent report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they come up with these alternative measures. So we know that the unemployment rate is 7.6%. But then if you add people who are marginally attached, that's like people who are working part-time but want to work full-time, and people who are discouraged workers and have dropped out of the labor force, we get up to a number that's more like 14%, 13.9%. So when we look at all the hidden unemployment, we're already well firmly into that double-digit area.
You know, we keep hearing these dismal job reports, but also that the news is, quote, worse than many economists expected, end quote. Does that include you? This is worse than what you expected?
No, because, first of all, I'm in North Carolina where everything that you've talked about, the furloughs, the layoffs, we've been seeing some of that stuff for a while. Secondly, I tend to be somewhat pessimistic about some of these numbers. So, you know, the basic forecast that most economists had out on Friday, the report comes out at 8:30 in the morning, and they were saying 7.5, and so it was 7.6. I figured that it would be something, you know, between 7.5 and 8. And, you know, our labor market is hemorrhaging jobs because there's no money out there, because I think that the Congress is fiddling while Rome burns in terms of a stimulus package. They were much more generous when it came to the bailout for banks than they have been when it's come to human beings. So I don't think it's going to get better, A, until we get some money in the pipeline and some jobs in the pipeline. I think cities and states, especially places like California, would want to start running proposals by their congresspeople about ways they can put people back to work quickly.
Well, let's talk about some of these banks and proposals that will help. The Obama administration is contemplating as a next step creating the so-called bad bank to store all of those toxic assets. I want to ask you how it works, but also to talk a little bit about the background on this, because I remember the Resolution Trust Corporation, as I'm sure you do, in the 1980s after the failed savings and loan debacle. Is this the same kind of thing, and did it work then, and would it work now?
It's the same concept as getting the junk, if you will, out of the mainstream financial sector and putting it somewhere where the government buys the asset and holds it, perhaps sells it or scrubs it up. As you remember with the RTC, they were banks were for sale pretty much, and they were pretty undervalued. The challenge with that is valuing a bad asset. In other words, if you've got a bank that they think it's worth, $100 million, the fact of the matter is their stock is worth maybe $70 or $60 million, they're going to try to get as much as they can from the government. And the government ought to give them as little as they can. And so you really end up spending a lot of time dithering and dickering about what it's worth. And the math is this. If the government pays them less, when the bank recovers, the taxpayers get more. But obviously, these bankers want to cover their back. RTC costs us a lot of money. The Resolution Trust Corporation costs the taxpayers a lot of money. And if we go to a bad bank strategy, I predict that it'll cost us a lot of money.
You know, the FDIC shut down three more banks over the weekend, two in California, another in Atlanta, Georgia. Are we still seeing, well, obviously we are because of what I just said, but do you anticipate even more bank foreclosings?
There is a possibility. We still have not seen the kind of bank foreclosures that we saw, you know, in the 80s with the RTC, with the savings and loans. And we certainly haven't seen anything like we saw in the 1930s. I believe the number of banks that have closed is something under 40 so far. And then many of them are small banks. That doesn't make it any better, especially for someone who's a depositor in one of those banks. But this is not the, of the crisis proportion that it could be. We do have many safeguards against bank closures. However, I expect, again, we will probably see 100 banks close. There'll probably be smaller regional banks, but some of them may be larger banks. You know, we have some challenges already with, of course, Bank of America and their merger with Merrill Lynch. And there may be some other large banks that are going to be challenged.
There's a voice that we have not heard a lot from lately, and I want to ask you about it. I'm talking about Fed Chief Ben Bernanke. He seems to have all but disappeared from the headlines. Why is that we aren't hearing more from him as the stimulus package gets debated?
Well, Bernanke's role is to manage U.S. monetary policy. What does money cost, bank regulations, all that stuff. So, frankly, he doesn't have very many arrows in his quiver yet left. I think we're down to under 1% for the federal funds rate. So there's not a lot of pontificating around interest rates that Bernanke can do. He ought to be a greater voice around the stimulus, especially around the strategy, the bad bank strategy you mentioned. I believe that what he's doing really is letting the Obama economic team get their feet wet. Very, very soon, we ought to be hearing that he and the Treasury Secretary have met. He's not an Alan Greenspan. If you think back to 1992 when Clinton was elected, Greenspan immediately jumped out there, and it was almost a jockeying between Greenspan and Clinton. And Greenspan made it clear, hey, I'm the money guy. I'm in charge of this, guys. And he went to the White House. He had a very long meeting with Clinton. It's been written about the Washington Post reporter has written extensively about that meeting. Carl Bernstein. Yep, he's written about that. So, Greenspan was much more one to position himself as aggressive. If we think about Bernanke, Bernanke's been in the role now for under 2 years or about 2 years. I wouldn't say that he hasn't gotten his feet wet, but I would say that he doesn't have the aggression that Greenspan had. And in many ways, that's good. But you're certainly right that his name, we aren't hearing from him. But I would expect it would be discordant if within the next couple of weeks, as the Obama economic team comes together, it would be very discordant if we did not see some photos of Bernanke going to the White House, sitting with the Treasury Secretary, sitting with Summers and doing some of that. If he hasn't done something like that in the next 2 years, 2 weeks, he's very much abdicating his role.
Let's talk about what some of the states are trying to do. We know that the president went to the Midwest today to try to pitch his stimulus plan. Out here in California, though, things are as bad as they are any place in the country, if not worse. And as a result of that, California is one of those places where the unemployment rate is higher than the national average, and there is a new system here now called Furlough Fridays. The governor has ordered state workers to take every other Friday off without pay. It's already affected the DMV, the Office of Emergency Services. Is this going to be spreading around the country, do you think?
Well, the furlough is a way of keeping people in their jobs and giving them a pay cut. So if you take 2 days off a month, that's a 10% out of an average of 20 working days in a month. That's a 10% roughly pay cut. And what he's doing is spreading the pain around rather than to say, let's cut X number of jobs. Let's just, cut X number of hours. This is consistent with a trend that we see nationally that the number of hours worked per week is down just a touch, not much, but just a touch. And I do expect that cities and states are going to have to be imaginative. Here in North Carolina, the public universities, blessedly not the private ones, but the publics have had to take a 7% cut, which means my neighbors at North Carolina A&T and my neighbors at UNC Greensboro are having to cut at least 100 jobs in each case. So, rather than have to physically cut jobs, keep people employed. So it's not a bad idea. It's uncomfortable, obviously, for everyone, but it's a way to share the pain.
Let's bring the conversation to a close with this. We're seeing pictures today of people standing in lines in Chicago and Atlanta trying to get a few jobs that are being offered. You're at a university, and it's coming up on the spring when people will be graduating, some with degrees in business, et cetera. Really briefly, Dr. Malvo, what are you telling your graduates about what they should do with a job market as dismal as this one is?
as dismal as the job market is, people are being hired every day. I mean, you still have some churn in the labor market, so people are being hired. I tell my students to be prepared, have that resume, make sure it's perfect, absolutely perfect. And that goes for everyone. Use your network like crazy, and follow up with people as quickly as you can. Standing outside is one way to get a job, but making telephone calls inside is another. Be wary of the internet. A lot of people are trying to find jobs on the internet, and they're putting out a lot of their personal information, social security numbers and other things, and that's just an invitation for some crazy desperate people to do identity theft. So be careful about what you put out there, but be as forceful as you can and get back to people as professional as you can. Get back to people as quickly as you can. If people offer you interviews at inconvenient times, too bad. Just do it, because these jobs are hard to come by. They're there, but they're hard to come by.
And I imagine that there's no major, really, that is the one that is recession-proof, is there?
There really isn't. There really isn't. I mean, in education, there are some opportunities. Social services, of course, are being cut. Business is being cut. So there's nothing, but there are pockets of opportunity in everything. The other thing I've told students, now to our listening audience,
don't be
afraid to take something part-time.
All right, that's good. Don't be afraid to take something part-time. Dr. Malveaux, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
That was author and economist Dr. Julianne Malveaux. She is also the president of Bennett College.